today we're making sweet potato pies from scratch. We're making our crust from scratch as well as the filling.
Thanksgiving Day in America, a time when families come together and neighbors gather to help the less fortunate. It's Friday, November 23rd, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Also ahead, Taiwan tense ahead of Saturday's elections. Cancer treatments without chemo. And Ariana Grande wowing fans once again. It's all ahead on today's VOA Asia. The Trump administration says that China failed to alter its unfair practices at the heart of the U.S.-China trade conflict at the recent APEC summit. Phil Levy with the Chicago Council on Foreign Affairs told VOA's Ira Melman that the lack of results at APEC will make things more complicated for both Presidents Trump and Xi when they meet later this year in Argentina.
It did not seem like a diplomatic success, and it also did not seem like it was setting the stage for any quick resolution of the conflict between the United States and China. If anything, Vice President Pence, who had a long career as a free trader, has seemed to be the voice of entrenched opposition to China.
Why do you think that is? Was that set up that way, that he went instead of Trump? Is there an intentional move, as far as you are concerned, about taking a very strong sense against China? And how is China reacting to that?
Presidents like to show up when they think there's going to be some, you know, glory to be reaped from this. And that clearly was not the case with APEC, that this was going to be conflict and, you know, being chastised by someone. And if you're president, that's when you think, I'll send the vice president in my stead. I think what we're seeing here is, particularly in the approach that Vice President Pence has taken, you're not only getting the litany of economic complaints about China, but they're also getting tinged with serious national security concerns. The important point about that is it's going to make it very hard for this administration to reverse course with any speed.
Is that not the case for China, as their very strong sense by Xi Jinping? Is it not almost the same situation?
Well, I think one of the ways to interpret China's reaction to all this was those who had hypothesized that China would be vulnerable, that China's economy was shaky, that China was going to be desperate to have a quick resolution, were probably disabused of that notion, that you cannot slap China in the face like this and expect them to simply surrender. They didn't. They took a strong stand. They tried to claim the high ground as the defender of the multilateral trading system. There's a fair bit of irony in that. But rhetorically, it puts them in a somewhat stronger position given the attacks on the system that the Trump administration has put forward.
Now, we move on to the next coming weeks when the meeting between Trump and Xi is at least scheduled on the sidelines in Buenos Aires. How do you think this prelude to that meeting will affect that meeting?
I certainly don't think the results of APEC bode well. Ideally, if you are going to have a successful summit between heads of state, you have months at least of background work by lower level officials that would not usually be at the vice presidential level, but lower still, who are working out all the details, teeing everything up, and leaving a few key issues to be resolved. As far as I know, there are some meetings that are starting to happen, but we haven't seen the kind of preparatory work that usually will lead to a successful summit, even if we were talking about relatively mundane issues. And the kind of things on the agenda between the U.S. and China are not mundane, nor are they easy.
So what kind of pitfalls does that raise?
It means that you could have a repeat of the G20 of the kind of conflict that we saw at APEC, where it's not open hostility, of course, but it's kind of chilly.
So what happens now? What happens if your assessment and your prediction of the possibility of the meeting in Buenos Aires to end up like APEC, where does it leave the situation?
Well, this would be China sort of calling President Trump's bluff, perhaps, that the president has kind of hinted to farmers and others who are suffering from Chinese retaliation that a deal is around the corner, the end is in sight, don't worry, hang on, you'll sell those crops after all. If you don't have a deal, I don't think soybean crops can sit forever in the fields or in the silos. And meanwhile, the president has committed $200 billion of imports from China from 10% to 25% as of January 1st, and that's coming up soon.
Phil Levy with the Chicago Council on Foreign Affairs. These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now on voanews.com. North and South Korea have connected a road across their shared border for the first time in 14 years. At least 50 people were killed and 83 others wounded in a suicide bomb blast at a gathering of religious scholars in Kabul. Vladimir Putin says he wants to sign a peace treaty with Japan regarding a World War II-era dispute over a group of islands. And Indian President Sri Ramnath Kovind visits Vietnam Sunday through Thursday. He's set to meet Vietnamese president for closed-door talks. Expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com. Taiwan voters go to the polls Saturday for midterm local elections, seen as a test of the popularity for the two-year administration of President Tsai Ing-wen, who has favored a more independent path from China. This ballot also includes 10 referenda, including one that calls for a change in the name Taiwan uses for its athletic teams competing in international sporting events. That name change would be from Chinese Taipei to Taiwan. And that's a change that could rile mainland China. Bill Sharp is a longtime China and Taiwan analyst who hosts the Hawaii-based online program Asia in Review. He spoke with VOA's Victor Beatty about the importance of the electoral outcome.
It seeks to fill over 11,000 local government positions, everything from the key races of the mayor of Taipei, the mayor of Taichung, the mayor of Kaohsiung, down to what you would call very low-level village folks. So it's rather massive, and the outcome of this will certainly have an effect on the upcoming presidential and legislative elections, which will be held in 2020.
Well, the DPP currently holds many local positions. Does it really just stand to lose? It probably won't gain very many more, will it?
Well, I think that there's a possibility that the DPP will lose maybe as many as four major positions.
Will the economy be the main issue?
Well, I think the economy is one, air quality is another. Of course, relations with China, which somebody would say means economic issue, are certainly the big ones. And probably not quite as pronounced as in other elections, the sense of Taiwan identity, but definitely air quality, economics, cross-strait or relations with China. These are going to be the big drivers.
There are a number of referendum on the ballot, one of which calls for Taiwan to change the name it uses at international sporting events. Will this be a big issue with China?
An enormous issue with China. This is the kind of thing that will set China off with no problem at all. But one has to realize, and I don't think that China realizes this, China insists that everybody in Taiwan is Chinese. But if you talk to people in Taiwan and ask them, are you Chinese or are you Taiwanese? 95% of the time, they're going to say Taiwanese. Yes, their ancestors came to Taiwan 300 years ago. But these societies have evolved in very, very different ways. And I think that sometimes the mainland fails to fully grasp this.
The DPP's chief rival, of course, the Kuomintang, the KMT party, which has been seen as one that tries to accommodate Beijing. Is it hardening its position more to the DPP way of thinking?
Despite there being different, despite them having different ideas about Taiwan identity and relations with China, that actually, in many ways, they're very similar. What they call the light green and the light blue actually have a lot of common interests. Some issues like cross-strait relations, relations with China, and Taiwan identity can set them apart. I personally think that, yes, okay, people in the Nationalist Party, at least some people, talk up a good story on unification. But when it comes right down to it, they really don't want it.
Bill Sharp of the online program Asia in Review. Happening now in Asia, Asian markets were mixed on Wednesday afternoon amid shaky investor confidence after steep losses on Wall Street. Hong Kong's Hang Seng rose 0.23% in afternoon trade. The Shanghai Composite rose 0.21% to close at 2651.51. U.S. markets are closed for the Thanksgiving holiday. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. And we're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. International students to the United States bring billions of dollars and thousands of jobs to the nation's economy and remain an important diplomatic key to global diplomacy. But as VOA's Kathleen Strzok reports, more and more students are starting to feel they might look elsewhere in the world for higher education.
The U.S. remains the top destination in the world, hosting more than 1 million college students. That's twice as many students as Britain, which ranks second. Education experts say after 10 years on the rise, applications are now dropping because of the high price of tuition and the current political climate.
I don't know if you're aware, but the United States has consistently attracted about a quarter of the international students globally. That's pretty amazing.
But those numbers are declining, according to the latest annual report from the Institute of International Education in Washington.
There's a slower rate of students coming into the U.S. There was a sharp decline of over 6%. And so this is an indication of several factors.
Experts attribute the drop not just to cost in politics, but also to anxiety over immigration, trouble getting visas, and student safety. Some students say they feel unwelcome in the U.S., something other countries are capitalizing on, including Canada, China, Australia, New Zealand, and Europe.
For me personally, I had to wait 10 months to get my visa. They accept your visa or reject it, or they tell you, like, oh, wait.
Safety is also a top concern for foreign students when considering higher education in the U.S. Recent incidents have fueled that fear.
Last year, I think a couple of Indians were killed in Kansas, I think. They were mistaken for Middle Easterners. And that was a big news in India, and that caused not just a bit of a diplomatic row, but also that, hey, you know, what's happening? Are we safe? And for Sikh students, regularly get mistaken for Muslims, and, you know, are victims of hate crimes.
While the U.S. is statistically safe for students, international news coverage of such events has caused some students to think twice about studying in the U.S. Meanwhile, the U.S. government says international education remains a pillar of its economic and diplomatic efforts.
Just last year, international students contributed over $42 billion to the United States economy and supported over 450,000 United States jobs. That's pretty incredible. This two-way relationship is beneficial to our national security. The Trump administration is charting a new course for U.S. foreign policy, which includes the promotion of America's national security interests through educational and cultural exchanges.
Educators say they have stepped up efforts to recruit foreign students and assure them that they are welcome in the U.S. Kathleen Strzok, VOA News, Washington.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This news alert from VOA Asia, just over a quarter of Hong Kong's working women would quit their jobs to take on family responsibilities if needed. That's a greater percentage than anywhere else in Asia, according to a global survey by HSBC. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features. This is VOA Asia. And VOA Asia continues. After a diagnosis of breast cancer, many women have surgery, followed by chemotherapy and radiation. But a new study shows that if it's caught early enough, women might be able to avoid the chemotherapy. VOA's Carol Pearson has that story.
Since she was diagnosed with breast cancer last April, Amy Adam values family time even more.
It kind of, you know, made us aware that, you know, when it comes down to it, family is what matters.
Adam was lucky. A mammogram caught her cancer early, when the tumor was just 3 by 4 millimeters, smaller than the size of a pencil eraser. Her treatment, a lumpectomy, followed by radiation.
No chemo. Did not have chemo.
Dr. Emily Albright is a surgical oncologist at the University of Missouri Healthcare. She says more women with early-stage breast cancer may be able to skip chemotherapy. A study published in the New England Journal of Medicine shows that genetic testing can determine the likelihood of the cancer returning. The study found women with a low risk of the cancer recurring did not benefit from chemotherapy. Women with a high risk of recurrence do better with chemotherapy. But Albright says doctors didn't know how to advise women in the mid-range.
The recent results have clarified that for women at intermediate risk of recurrence, the majority of those do not benefit from chemotherapy.
With genetic testing, doctors can determine the likelihood of a woman's cancer returning. Most people know that nausea, hair loss, and fatigue result from chemotherapy. But chemotherapy can also cause heart and nerve damage. Albright says the results of this study will help many patients whose breast cancer is caught early.
As we learn more about the biology, we're able to tailor treatments to the specific type of tumor that a patient has. So there are some small tumors that may be more aggressive, and there may be some larger tumors that are less aggressive.
Screening was key in catching Amy Adams' cancer. Mammograms can detect a lump 2 years before a woman can even feel it. Adams said it was a huge relief not to have to undergo chemotherapy. Because of this study, more women will be able to get treated without the negative side effects of chemotherapy. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
This news alert from VOA Asia, an American man, 27-year-old John Allen Chow, has been killed by an endangered tribe in India's Andaman and Nicobar Islands. Fishermen who took the man to North Sentinel Island say tribespeople shot him with arrows and left his body on the beach. All the big stories coming your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. And now on VOA Asia, one of the most popular female singers has just released a very successful new album, from a hit album. VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London joined our Sarah Williams for the latest.
Well, today we've got the brand new song from Ariana Grande, which is off of her Sweetener album. It's called Thank You, Next. A lot of people believe that the song is the result of the failed relationship she recently had with Pete Davidson, who's a comedian actor from Saturday Night Live on NBC television here in the United States. But she won't confirm or deny that report. But the song is so good that it's gone to number one, and it's been number one for 2 weeks. The fastest number one debut since 2015 when Adele was number one. There are only 6 female singers who have debuted at number one. And so Ariana Grande is in elite company. So let's check out the new song. It's called Thank You, Next.
I read somewhere on the internet that maybe she had tweeted about she'd had some hard times recently.
Well, yeah. I mean, the whole world is aware of the hard times she's had. First of all, she performed in Manchester last May, a year plus, and people lost their lives because after her concert at the Manchester Arena, a suicide bomber blew himself up and took a number of lives, injured a number of other folks. That was devastating to her. She went into depression. She still suffers anxiety and loses a lot of sleep over that. It's something that affected her deeply. Then, this past year, her boyfriend, ex-boyfriend at the time, Mac Miller, took his own life. So she had those things to deal with while putting out a brand new album called Sweetener, and recently got engaged, all within a month of dating Pete Davidson. And then it ended all within 2 months. So it didn't really last. Probably wasn't meant to last from the beginning. Problem is, when you're young like Ariana is, you get a tattoo with your your future husband's name. And what do you do after it ends? You know, that's what she's been dealing with. She covered it up with a Band-Aid once. She then had something written over the tattoo she had gotten. Another way she's dealing with her anxiety and depression, she cut her hair, which is kind of interesting for Ariana because she's famous for having a ponytail,
right,
which she's had for a number of years since she appeared on a children's show on Nickelodeon TV. So she's cut her hair. It's short, no more ponytail. But she's going out on tour. This album is doing very well. She's had quite a few, God is a Woman, No Tears Left to Cry, Breathe, and these are songs she's already had hits with. Now the latest at number one, Thank You, Next, is out. And so she's going on the road with Normani Corday, formerly of Fifth Harmony, so it's going to be a great tour. Ariana is definitely one of the artists to watch right now. She's very, very popular in the mainstream and currently on the charts doing well with her new album, Sweetener.
Well, it seems because of that and her new tour, she's got a lot to feel good about.
She does. Well, hopefully she's feeling good enough to hold it all together and keep the proper perspective. There are people close to her that say that she's not been herself lately, so, you know, she's got a lot of support. She loves her fans. And hopefully, you keep reading today where people like Demi Lovato, Selena Gomez, these stars in the mainstream are dealing with the pressures of being famous. And hopefully Ariana keeps it together, keeps focused, you know, on the future and how bright things are looking for her in the future.
Thanks a lot, Larry. That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossings.
VOA's Sarah Williams speaking with Larry London, host of Border Crossings. Excuse me. Volunteers have been getting ready for the Thanksgiving holiday on Skid Row in Los Angeles. That's the downtown neighborhood where thousands of homeless people live in parks and tents. VOA's Mike Sullivan spoke with volunteers in the shelter kitchen where the holiday meal is being prepared.
On the streets, it's a harsh reality, with the homeless camping on the concrete. Inside, an industrial-scale kitchen is able to feed thousands with help from volunteers. On this day, they're employees of Wells Fargo, a financial services company. They're getting tips from kitchen staff at the Los Angeles Mission, a Christian charity.
This is my first time. I don't know if this is the best thing to do.
Pies will be readied and stored to be baked on the day of the annual holiday dinner.
We are preparing for our Thanksgiving meal. Today we're making sweet potato pies from scratch. We're making our crust from scratch as well as the filling.
600 pies, dessert for 4,000. This after they finish their turkey with all the usual holiday dishes.
And then over here, we're working on our cornbread stuffing.
This volunteer is pleased her company helps with a volunteer program.
So allow us to come here to support with the community and get a chance to work in others and help others. I'm glad to be here today.
Another full-time banker, now a part-time kitchen worker, is also glad to pitch in.
And give back a little bit, right? Yeah. No, this is great. I'm glad we could do this.
The chef overseeing the kitchen understands homelessness. He spent 5 years on the streets himself.
You know, at the time that I became homeless, it was a housing market crash. There were a lot of things going on. I went through a divorce. I just made some poor decisions.
He got help and is now helping others get a hot meal and support so they can turn their lives around. It's help that's needed every day, including Thanksgiving. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
And that is VOA Asia for today and for this week. Thanks so much for being with us. We're always glad to have you here. We will be back with you on Monday. We hope to see you then. And until then, have a great weekend.